We are at a critical time in human history. Social movements, while very present and very vigorous, are very politically weak right now. The left is very politically weak right now. We saw outpourings of people in the streets during the lead up to the war in Afghanistan and Iraq. And once the war was launched, it's hard to find and figure what to do next. We saw the election stolen in 2000, and thousands of people, predominantly black people, disenfranchised and not allowed for their vote to be either cast or counted. And yet we were not able to get Bush out of the White House back in 2000. Outpouring and outrage of this Bush regime, against this Bush regime around the world has been going on for the past 4 years. But then it gets a little bit confusing for those of us who are on the left, because John Kerry does not excite me. And what happens when the danger of the, in my opinion, neo-fascist that's in office is so great that we have to vote for the guy who is, yes, an imperialist, who is, yes, let's be clear, says that he is not against the war in Iraq. We need to put our heads together and try to find that space of clarity, clarity of thought, and then clarity of action, so that it doesn't seem so confusing, but that it is a clear and thoughtful, tactical choice that is connected to a well-developed plan and supported by a base and a social movement that's built by working people and communities of color and and women and immigrants and people who are fighting for a radically different vision of the world, and understanding that in that fight you make many tactical choices that can help us take our next step and help us build our foundation. So with that said, I'd like to present to you Eric Mann, and I'd like to welcome you to the first open conversation of progressives and independents to defeat George Bush.
Hi, I'm Eric Mann, and September 9th, 2004, 2 days before another anniversary of September 11th, which is an event that's been used to bludgeon us, to bludgeon the people of the third world, an event that's been essentially turned into a commodity by the right. George Bush uses it probably in every single sentence. An event that's not tremendously understood. The United States claims that there is not a battle between civilizations, but rather there's a battle between civilization and chaos, civilization and evil, civilization and barbarism. They're absolutely right. The entire civilized world is taking on the barbarism and the evil of the United States government. So that is right. There is a fight. Now, as Kikanza Ramsey pointed out, we are in a very difficult situation where making the right choices for those of us on the left is critical, number one, to try to stop or reduce the speed of the rightward movement in this country, and secondly, to build an independent left in this country, which will be a project that will take decades. And so every day, and certainly on November 2nd, 2004, we have some important decisions to make, but not primarily about who we should vote for, because I will be arguing that we should be voting for John Kerry to defeat George Bush. That, in some way, to me, is a relatively easy statement to make. The question is, can we build a movement? Can we come out as a third force in this? Is there the possibility that we can be the winners in the election of 2004? That's the question, Because if John Kerry is elected, if we, as I say, we are fortunate enough to have John Kerry elected, the day afterwards we will be having to march on the White House to say, how dare you say 4 more years in Iraq? It is not just Bush talking about 4 more years. Kerry may be talking about more years in Iraq than the Bush administration may be. So we're going to have to figure out several questions. At the analytical level, what are the differences between Bush and Kerry, the Republicans and the Democrats? Let's discuss briefly tonight, and not in great detail, why at this point I reject the candidacies of both Ralph Nader and Peter Camejo and the Greens and David Cobb. And third, what can we do in the next basically 2 months to have our own campaign in which the left in Los Angeles, in the United States, and internationally comes out stronger than when we went in? In terms of trying to develop an analytical framework, the first thing that I have assumed that we could agree upon is that there are three united fronts that need to be built in this country: a united front against the right, and a united front against reaction with the potential danger of fascism, a united front against racism, which is central to the formation of the United States, and a united front against imperialism, which is not a policy of the United States, but unfortunately the very construction of monopoly capitalism in the United States that requires the subjugation of whole nations and peoples and is imposed through a radical racist theory of white supremacy and imperialist patriarchy. That's the framework of three things that we're trying to fight. I wish that I could tell you that one of the candidates is leading the anti-racist, anti-right, anti-imperialist United Front, but that's not the case. There are no candidates of the two major parties leading any of those. But let's look at each one separately. The United Front against the right. Where do we start? We start with the United Front against the right began in 1492, with the beginning of the colonization of America by European Christian pseudo-imperialists. And the role of Christianity must be looked at much more seriously, and I'm just beginning to do this study, but one scholar said that it is both Christianity and Islam, which do have components of conquest in their theory in terms of religious groups. The Jews, who in the past have not had as much in that theory, seem to be making up rapidly through the State of Israel of reconstructing Judaism also into a racist ideology of conquest through the construction of the Israeli state. But the first point I'm trying to make is that where would we begin this historical intervention? Just arbitrarily, with the Watergate efforts to overthrow George McGovern's campaign by the Republicans. Then moving to Nixon's secret government and to Henry Kissinger's statements that basically the U.S. Congress is an impediment to his overthrowing of governments all over the world. Henry Kissinger's statement that if the people of Chile are stupid enough to vote in socialism or communism, we in the United States have the moral right to overthrow their own government. So let's understand that, as we call bourgeois democracy, U.S. democracy does not believe in free elections, those who are in power, not even free elections in the United States, because the Republicans consistently work to overthrow the Democrats. And the only thing I can say for the Democrats is they seem to be weaker rather than more democratic in their response to this. But they have been the major victim of the right, and it's as well as being a force of the right. We then move to the Willie Horton case with George Bush Jr. raising the issue against Michael Dukakis of a black prisoner who was let out on parole, who did commit a murder, as I understand it, while out parole, and therefore the answer, black people should never be let out of prison. And those white liberals from Massachusetts should be the subject of great invective by the white voting population in the United States. We then move to the Iran-Contra scandal, in which actually, as somebody pointed out, John Kerry, the early John Kerry, was a courageous opponent of the Iran-Contra scandal, in which when Congress refused to give money to the Contras in Nicaragua, the U.S., through Oliver North and through Ronald Reagan, circumvented, again, free elections in the United States, so-called free elections, to try to overthrow the Sandinista government in Nicaragua. And lastly, or next to lastly, was the impeachment of Bill Clinton on no grounds whatsoever. Bill Clinton, one of the all-time slime bags of history, no friend of the black community, but still a victim of undemocratic, right-wing attacks, so that the minute this guy got in office, they began with an investigation of Whitewater, moved from Whitewater to Paula Jones, and unable to get a conviction, found Monica Lewinsky, in which there was a permanent prosecutor, Kenneth Starr, on the President of the United States from the minute that he won. So to give the Republicans credit, they are revolutionaries, counter-revolutionaries, but they understand the role of revolution. They fight to win. They fight by any means necessary. They will overthrow any election that they lose. They will impeach a president, assassinate a president. They will assassinate both inside and outside the United States. Not the Republicans as a bourgeois party, but the right-wing forces inside the Republican Party do represent a clear and present danger to us, and have for a very long time. Bush gets elected through a stolen election. You don't need to hear about that. The Supreme Court of Scalia, Rehnquist, and Clarence Thomas, they also believe by any theory necessary, so that they actually use states. They've been for states' rights all their life, but when the Florida Supreme Court calls for a recount, they now say it's a violation of civil rights. They have never used the word civil rights until George Bush. They didn't even know what the word meant until George Bush was up. We now fast forward to New York City, in which at the Republican Convention, we have seen some very frightening changes in even the rules of bourgeois law. 500,000 people had a march in New York City and could not get a permit to have a rally. The rally has been the critical component of a march, because otherwise, after you march, what do you talk about? Where is the political leadership that I was experienced when H. Rapp Brown and Stokely Carmichael and Robert Moses and SDS and all the different political speakers, Howard Zinn, with Martin Luther King, Dr. Spock, would give these amazing speeches at the end of the march. Imagine Dr. King without I Have a Dream. Imagine the March on Washington without the permit to speak. This is where we're going right now. And the only question that the press asks now, the Murdoch-controlled right-wing press, is, was there violence, meaning apparently demonstrators getting arrested? Was it peaceful or not, and how many arrests there were? There's no discussion of what you were there to march for, no right to talk about what you were marching for, no coverage, except a group of people came, it was peaceful, and they went home, or a group of people came and they broke a window and they were arrested. We now have the situation where 1,000 people were arrested, and we now hear things like 1,000 arrests happen, or 1,800 arrests happen, but they don't say that the police arrested 1,800 people. It sounds like we went out and 1,800 of us tried to get arrested. Tonight on KPFK radio, Jim Lafferty, as I was coming over here, said that among the arrests were the legal observers from the National Lawyers Guild in this new literal trap of a net, a dragnet, imposed on demonstrators, in which if you're just standing on the corner, they throw the net on you, you're rounded up. So the first point I'm trying to make is George Bush, if elected on November 2nd, 2004, is already planning a net around this whole room, a net around all of us progressives and left, and John Kerry is not. He is doing many other terrible things, but he is not advocating the police state. And yes, we can find his vacillations and his terrible votes on the Patriot Act, but that's not the point. The Democratic Party at this moment in history, until Joseph Lieberman gets to be the head of it, is not planning to lock us up and throw away the key. I would hate to say that that's a major distinction, but it is. We are in grave danger in this country. There are more than 2 million people in prison, more than 2/3 of whom are black and Latino. It is the greatest civil rights and human rights crisis in our lifetime. Who would have thought that in 1964, when we won the amazing Civil Rights Act, that in what, 40 years, enormous portions of the black and Latino population have been re-enslaved through the prison system. You know that, and I don't have to tell you that the Democrats are both complicit and at times active in that. But Ted Kennedy, who I do see as a tactical ally for the left, is trying to introduce a new civil rights bill. You have to understand that the old Civil Rights Bill of 1964, the old Voting Rights Act of 1965, is this close to being eliminated legally if we do not impose a new Civil Rights Act that takes back the rights that the Scalia-Rehnquist card has taken away and does not take back and does not reauthorize the Voting Rights Act, which is coming up in about 3 years. In that situation, Kerry and Edwards are our allies. And again, understand, we need allies because we are the smallest force of all the forces that I'm discussing today. The anti-racist, anti-imperialist United Front, which needs to try to lead this country someday, is a very small force that's trying to grow. And we have to find allies to help us grow, to give us some room to breathe. The third is the anti-imperialist United Front. That would mean concretely the self-determination of oppressed nationality people in this country and the self-determination of people in the third world. There's a debate now, apparently, on does the third world want George Bush defeated? But it's not much of a debate, because if you've gone to the third world, as we have in the World Summit on Sustainable Development, the World Conference Against Racism, if you saw the Bush administration pull out of the World Conference Against Racism, if you saw the Bush administration sabotage any environmental progress at the World Summit on Sustainable Development, every third world person that we met at those conferences in South Africa came to us and said, what are we going to do about the United States? And what are we going to do about the Bush administration? Understand that on the issue of international intervention, Kerry is very bad and getting worse. I almost can't stand to hear the guy because he is sort of trying to do, can you top this? As we pointed out, he had a false leg to stand on by claiming he was deceived by the claims of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. He knew there were not weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, just like he knows marriage is not between a man and a woman. He knows that. But he's a politician, a calculated person, a hollow man, a soulless person. You watch him, as my wife Leanne points out, you can't, John, get the voice out. Just would you please try to get the voice out? But he can't, because it's trapped inside so many calculations of personal greed, personal ambition, personal psychosis at times, that the guy can hardly talk. But when he does talk, he's talking really bad in this election. When he does talk, he says, I guarantee that I will be out in 4 years in Iraq because I will get the Europeans in. I am tired of Americans paying all the dollars, says John Kerry, and giving all the lives. So apparently he wants to diversify the dollars and diversify the lives. And that is in my book, The 2004 Elections, A Turning Point for the U.S. Left. There are many things he really will do that are bad. There are other things we have to hope that he's bluffing about. We have to hope that once in office, that some of this is campaign rhetoric, but that's not the basis on which we're trying to elect John Kerry. We have to assume the worst. I would never, as a person on the left, tell you vote for John Kerry because privately he's a dove. No, I think privately he's a hawk and publicly he's a hawk. But it is possible that a Gore administration would not have invaded Iraq. It is possible. If we were strong enough to say we didn't care, I wish we had that luxury. If we had the presidency, I wouldn't care about Gore or Bush in 2000. But we did argue for a vote for Gore in 2000. And I think that if the distinction was simply that the Patriot Act would have been slightly weaker, that the invasion would have been of Afghanistan and not of Iraq, those would have been choices for the left at a time when there seems to be and I want to say this clearly as one of my themes, an ultra-left, Trotskyist, petty bourgeois, metaphysical perception of choices that do not relate to the real world of choices, which is the arena in which life exists. And those of us who are organizers, do not have contempt for real choices. Let me give you some distinctions. The first thing to understand is that the first cutting-edge consciousness for any young leftist is breaking with the Democratic Party and developing a hatred of the Democratic Party. For those of you who aren't there yet, I hope my talk tonight helps you get there. But for those of you who are already there, the question now is what is to be done? The question now is, given that we understand that, what are our choices? The first time I understood this was in 1966, when Tom Hayden went to Vietnam as part of an SDS and Communist Party and Staunton Lynn United Front. He went to Vietnam and he came back on the first illegal delegation to go to Vietnam and to try to have discussions with the Vietnamese. When he came back to Newark, New Jersey, and I was in SDS, I had been an anti-war leader prior to that, and I said to Tom, what are you doing now? He says, I'm going to see Bobby Kennedy. I said, you're going to see Bobby Kennedy? Don't you know that Kennedy initiated the Green Berets who killed the Vietnamese? Don't you know that Kennedy sold out the civil rights movement in Mississippi and capitulated to J. Edgar Hoover? Why in the world are you going to talk to Bobby Kennedy? And he said, because the Vietnamese asked me to. Because the Vietnamese told me to. Because the Vietnamese ordered me to. There are splits inside the U.S. ruling class, and they have certain messages, signals that they want to give to the Kennedys. Against Johnson at the time, not against Nixon, but against when Lyndon Johnson was president. They saw a split between Bobby Kennedy and Lyndon Johnson. Those of us who are organizers understand splits in the ruling class. Ignacio Castaueda, who will not be here tonight because of personal reasons, said, remember to tell them the Vietnamese story you told them in Boston. Well, the Vietnamese story is another one, which is when I read Ho Chi Minh's biography, and he talked about how when the French occupied Vietnam and the Japanese came in, he considered a temporary alliance with the Japanese to try to get out the French. But then, when the United States defeated Japan, because that was part of the United Front that the communists were part of, he made tremendous overtures to the United States, hoping he could block the French and the Japanese with the United States. But then, when the United States came in and the French were defeated at Dien Bien Phu in 1954, the United States became the main enemy. It will be very clear to me that if we are lucky enough in 2004, my goal is to have John Kerry as my enemy, not George Bush as my enemy. That is the difference. That is the strategic difference. And it matters. It matters to us. It matters in a strategic way. I'm briefly going to talk about the Nader Kameho group and the David Cobb Greens, but I'm not here to have a polemic with good people on the left who have legitimate hatred of the two-party system and are trying to figure out what to do about it. They are not our enemies. They are our allies in the United Front Against Imperialism. They are people. If we can understand a tactical alliance with John Kerry, we certainly can understand a strategic alliance with Ralph Nader. We can understand that Ralph Nader is our ally. Ralph Nader is speaking out against the war. Ralph Nader is speaking out against the oppression of working people. We disagree tactically right now with, is this the right time to run an independent candidacy that we know will get 1-2% of the vote, which is not a bad thing. But at this point in history, we strongly disagree in an election that may be determined by 1-2% of the vote, because we think, to just make one point clear, that it will not be Ralph Nader and Peter Kameho and most of their supporters, most of them, who will bear the worst burden of a Bush victory. They, many of them, will be back in Bellingham, Washington, will be back in Berkeley, will be back at Washington Square Park, will be, you know, back in a situation of relative privilege, containing their critique of the system, whereas more black children will be going to prison, more countries will be invaded, more police brutality will be imposed. If you don't know the difference between the NYPD, who under Mayor Bloomberg arrested thousands of us, and the Democratic judge who issued an injunction against the NYPD and said, if you don't get those kids out of prison by 7 o'clock tonight, I'm going to give you a contempt order, then you don't exist in the real world of choices again. Because thank God for that Democratic judge. I wish I had the socialist judge there. But right now, that was not the choice given to us historically. Now we move to the more complicated question, the complicated question of what to do. Progressives and independents to defeat Bush is an effort to address a dilemma and an opportunity. Why did we form Progressives and Independents to Defeat Bush? Why did I write a book, The 2004 Elections, A Turning Point for the U.S. Left? I think that almost all the people in this room, if you are convinced that you want to get John Kerry elected, if you are convinced that the only way to defeat George Bush is to get John Kerry elected, does not mean you want to join or be put under the big net of the Democratic Party. You want to find some way to carry out what we call independence and initiative in the United Front. The first thing you have to understand is just this speech is breaking with the dictatorship of the Democratic Party's one-party line. There are captives inside the Democratic Party that we have to free. Number one is the AFL-CIO. It's not just John Sweeney, who is not a captive because he wants to be there, but many good people in the AFL-CIO. John Kerry is saying things like, I want to give private subsidies to corporations because I want to keep real jobs in the private sector, not those phony jobs in the public sector. Yeah, those phony jobs, like helping people with welfare, AIDS clinics, public health nurses, doctors, public defenders. The killing of the public sector by the Democrats as well as the Republicans is a crime, and the blood is on the Democrats' hands as well. So we want to be able to say that during the election, which is why we need progressives and independents to defeat Bush, just to say that. On women's rights, John Kerry and the Democrats now have a platform. It says we want to keep abortion safe, legal, but they've added a new word, rare. This was given to them by one of their right-wing advisors to tell them how to beat the right. So now apparently, after the election, if the Democrats are in, there's going to be a lottery about how many women can have an abortion. It'll be safe and legal, but since it has to be rare, I guess John Kerry will decide how many people get to have one every year. It's a pathetic position, but where is the National Organization for Women? Where are the women's groups that are trapped inside the Democratic Party to not take them up on that? Third, do you know the Democratic Party dropped support for the Kyoto Treaty in their last platform? While Clinton and Gore had support and haven't done jack about Kyoto, I looked at the environmental section and it was out. I called up several of my friends closer to the, quote, Democratic Party, and they put their head down and said, you're right, it's not a mistake. It was taken out. We're sick over it. I said, if you're sick over it, would you say something about it? After the election, I will say something about it. No, no, you have to say something now. If we're going to get people to vote for a Democrat, please, John Kerry without illusions, the Democratic Party without illusions. So they're weak on Kyoto, they're weak on women's rights, they're weak on civil rights, but again, it matters if you're lesbian, gay, transgender, or bisexual, it matters if one fool is saying, I'm against a constitutional amendment on gay marriage. I support civil unions. And what's his third one? I believe marriage is between a man and a woman. That's his position, Kerry. The second one is, I want to have a religious crusade against gay and lesbian people. I want to have a constitutional amendment which will be voted in every state of the union, which will show up on every ballot, which will create a literal witch hunt against LGBT people. There's a difference. I know there's a difference. And we have to understand that's a difference, and we have to take on Kerry squarely that marriage is not between a man and a woman, but marriage is between whoever wants to get married. That's the point. But the question is, again, we can't expect Kerry to lead that. But we again have to understand our role to lead and the differences for real life people with those different positions. On the environment, Kerry has a good environmental record. Dick Cheney is right to say that Kerry has the most liberal voting record in the Senate. But he's a man who's trying to swallow and hide his own decent past. John Kerry was an anti-war hero and is now a pro-war villain. He is killing his own best life, the best years of his own life. It's our job to build that movement. So given those choices, what can we do in the next 2 months? The first thing is we cannot change history in the next 2 months, but we can set the conditions for changing history in the next 2 months. We can do a lot to position ourselves to change history. I would hope, for instance, that progressives and independents to defeat Bush might segue into progressives and independents to defeat Schwarzenegger, because I can imagine Schwarzenegger running on an immigrant rights campaign to get himself nominated as president by changing the Constitution, and all of a sudden those of us who have immigrant rights are going to go, what the hell do we do? Once again, the right has captured the terms of the debate. They are setting this man up to be the replacement for George Bush. He is waiting in the wings with a Democratic wife who's sabotaging all the principles of her own family, who's becoming a front for girly men and not standing up to him, who is creating a smiling Democratic celebrity who goes on Oprah, and Oprah allows the use of her show to allow the Schwarzeneggers and Shrivers to have a love fest and does not stand up to him. So we're talking about the role of our independence at this point is urgent. The first thing, therefore, tonight is we have T-shirts. We have a book. It's a good book. And in fact, it's the good book, sisters and brothers. It's priced at $5, almost cheaper than Gideon's, which you get in the hotel. But we need a strategy book. We have T-shirts that say war and racism must go, with a picture of George Bush in the back, a demonstration saying progressives and independents to defeat Bush. Third, we're going to be organizing primarily in Black and Latino communities. There's a tremendous crisis right now in Black, Latino, and Asian Pacific Islander communities. But I want to specifically talk about the Black community, which led the struggle for voting rights for all of us, and yet there's such a deep sadness in the Black community today. When we go out and do voter registration, many people say, it doesn't matter. It's not worth the vote. Both parties are basically the same. They're not wrong in that fundamental sentiment, but it's part of the right-wing impact that people who fought for the right to vote in South Africa, who fought for the right to vote in the United States, are being convinced to almost give away their right to vote by a right-wing takeover of this country and by the Democratic Party's refusal to use the word black or civil rights or racism. And so there's no support for people at the grassroots, and progressives and independents to defeat Bush is going to have to go out and do not just voter registration. The reason we formed a political action committee is, as a political action committee, we can go beyond voter registration to do voter education, to criticize both parties, but to advocate for a vote for Kerry, but to also independently criticize Kerry. It's all those roles together that's going to be important, we think, that people could say, all right, I'm more interested in voting with you guys. Because after the election, we can take the fight back onto the buses, take the fight up with the LAPD, take the fight up with the prison system. I get it. I'm voting as part of a movement like SNCC did in the 60s. It was not simply voter registration. It was voter registration for black power, voter registration for a left in the United States, voter registration against the war. We're going to put out a voter guide. And I'll say, on these issues, here's where Kerry's better. On these issues, here's where Bush is better. Nowhere. But on the issue of Iraq, please note, no check for Kerry. On the issue of Afghanistan, no check for Kerry. On the issue of the Patriot, no check for Kerry. It will point out that life is not about checking boxes. Life is about realizing that many of the choices that you want in your heart and soul, the Democratic Party will not give you. And if you want to get involved in the electoral arena, you have to do it through an independent left movement. Then we want you to do house parties, to bring your friends in and to have an evening of political discussion. John Kerry, the only house party he wants to have is at Barbara Streisand's house. See? And even Move On, which is not providing any independent criticism of Kerry, is simply turning into now a kind of give us your money by through the internet. Dean, with all my criticism of Dean, when we have more time, the setup of this man, the way that this man ran and then was turned into a so-called maniac, his supporters called Deaniacs, the demonization of some of the best young people who tried to get involved in the election, he's now out of the picture through the media monopoly of just sort of disintegrating character assassination on him. So it's the ability to speak our mind that's very important. Next, we have to turn out voters who after the election say, I voted for progressives and independents to defeat Bush. That's who I voted for. The specific vote I took was, in this case, to defeat Bush. The next vote might be to defeat another proposition. The next vote might be to defeat Schwarzenegger. And yes, a subsequent might be to defeat Kerry. I'm an independent voter. That's why it's called progressives and independents, because in each political situation, we will make our choices as to what is best for the left, what's best for the people, what choices can we make at this time. And if Kerry, 4 years later, is the Lyndon Johnson and is running the war in Iraq, we may decide that the role of the left 4 years from now is to get him out. Or we may not. But it's all based on time, place, and conditions and building up an independent base, which we don't have. I want to then end with some questions some people have asked us on the left. One question has been, given that the electoral system is a bourgeois system, given that the electoral college is a totally racist system, given the fact that it's a winner-take-all system and that California is going to go for Kerry whether we work for the next 2 months or go to sleep for 2 months, in California, what is the difference? Let's start with that. The first thing is on the immediate tactical level, we don't have enough votes at the MTA. We don't have enough votes at the LAPD. We don't have enough votes to take on the three strikes law. We don't have enough votes to take on the right. Kerry calls this a safe state. What he means for him is it's safe for him. But California is not safe if you're black, Latino, or Asian. California is not safe. If you're a worker at Walmart, California is not safe if you're breathing in enough toxic fumes from the oil refineries to give children permanent lung damage and permanent brain damage. California is not safe. It is only safe within the electoral college system between Kerry and Bush. But it's not safe for us. So we have to be out there talking to people about many issues on the election, on the whole ballot line, including the propositions that are going to be on this ballot, and building an independent movement that's going to go into the streets electorally and otherwise on other subsequent issues. Second, it can't be safe if I should know the numbers, but like in one particular state, white people are voting at 65% and 70%, and black people are voting at 53%. A lot of people of color are basically registering voting at about 50%. There's a lot of talk about a future majority of color in this country. But let me tell you something. For the next 50 to 100 years, a white minority, if that's what it becomes, will still outvote the black and Latino Asian majority. And as more people of color register to vote, more white people and racists will register to vote. As people of color become the majority, white people will vote at 99%. Tell me, they will vote early and often. They will set a record for voting. Someone said, you know, the problem with the election in India is that poor people outvote the rich in India. So we have a lot to learn from the third world, because we need to tell third world people in the United States, don't give away your right to vote. It's only a tactic, but it's an essential democratic tactic that we have to enforce. That's part of what we're going to get out of the election. The next question is that we're having a lot of influence with people, which is pretty wonderful. We've sold over 1,000 books, and it's been out a month. And who's reading it? The key demonstrators in New York City, primarily people of color, primarily young leftists of all races, people that are strategic, people that really want to get involved. I mean, that's pretty good. The book is moving, and very thoughtful leaders all over the country are reading it and debating it. And a lot of people have said that we've actually changed their mind, that they are going to not just vote for Kerry in New York, in Miami, in other states. But here's the question they've asked. Are we not getting involved in a slippery slope? Are we not getting involved with God if we vote for Kerry? Are we going to start getting involved in elections all the time? And my answer is, that is not a slippery slope. Opening up a left-wing electoral component of an overall mass movement that, just to say a ballpark, puts 80% of its resources in building grassroots struggles against the capitalists, 80% in building grassroots struggles against U.S. imperialism all over the world, sends its people to South Africa, sends its people on the buses. But if we put 20 to 25% of our time learning how to be an electoral force in the mayor's race coming up, learning to be an electoral force in the state to get Dianne Feinstein out of office, trying to be an electoral force to go after Joe Lieberman in Connecticut, going to be an electoral force or a medical force to go after Zev Miller, because one of the reasons I believe in socialized medicine, I realized, is because we needed massive rabies shots at that Republican convention that should have been provided. So it's not a slippery slope. It is opening up an electoral front in an overall war in which the elections will never be our primary way of winning power in this country, but it should be a significant component of our arsenal. If a particular election does not offer us anything, we may just vote that way. If the election offers us not even the worthy of our vote, we won't vote. If the election is important, if there's a runoff for the mayoralty in Los Angeles, between Hertzberg and Villaraigosa, I see a difference. I see something worth voting for. So at every point, we will make our own independent assessment. The third thing that's very important that is happening is the concept of being a national force. We've been asked by forces in Miami to send some people to do voter protection in Miami, and in Florida. Not just progressives and independents to defeat Bush, but many nonprofits are actually able to do voter protection work in states like Miami or in other police states like Los Angeles. So we should be doing not just going to Florida to protect the vote, but understand that there's the potential of tremendous voter fraud in California as well. But that's something that you could do. I think it's very important for, this is a multiracial audience, but it may be that progressives and independents to defeat Bush will ask many of you to be election poll watchers in South LA, in East LA, in Pico Union, to stop the attacks on immigrants, some of whom have the right to vote, to stop the attacks on people of color who are not immigrants who will be questioned at the polling places. So what I'm saying is that we don't have the illusion of L.A. as a liberal place, and Florida is that terrible right-wing place. Voter protection must take place in L.A., and voter protection must take place in Florida. Ignacio Castaueda said to me that what he's going to do is he's going to Arizona. He's a Mexican minister in South L.A. His next 2 months, he's going to be in Arizona working on certain issues, in Colorado working on issues. If you have some travel time, this might be a good thing for you to do with your time, is to find out who is doing protection, voter protection work, and to be part of it. Finally, let's raise our imagination. Where's the hope? The hope exists first in demands that we want to think about. I think one of the choices we have, for instance, is to really seriously talk about eliminating the Electoral College. I have a serious proposal, which is not, I'm not the only one who thought of it. I think that Maine, New Hampshire, Nebraska, and Iowa should be merged into one state with two senators. Any state with an all-white population of such small number of people should not be given a senator. Harlem should be given two senators. East LA should be given two senators. I'm very serious. We have to think about a serious redistricting based on race, which Lonnie Guinier tried to write about as a constitutional scholar, and Bill Clinton appointed her to the head of the Civil Rights Division and then said, oh my God, not only did I not inhale, I never read her law review articles, you know, and fired her. But what she was getting to is there can't be civil rights in this country if there's not self-determination for oppressed nationality people, one of which is having the right to have your own voting districts based on race and your own senators based on race. What else is there to be hopeful about? The election of Hugo Chavez is something very important. An indigenous man, an Indio, a leftist, fighting as Allende did against a U.S. effort to have a coup. Jimmy Carter has now decided that he inspects every election, apparently outside the United States. You know, who asked him? Despite the Carter people who were causing nothing but muddying the water, they in this case came out and said it was a free election. Nice of them to say that, but who gives them the moral authority to determine whether it's a free election or not? It sets him up as a very dangerous figure. There is now discussion in Venezuela of land reform. Neoliberalism has driven land reform off the agenda in Latin America, and Hugo Chavez, with the control of the military, with a left-wing military, is making tremendous progress. The defense of the Cuban Revolution is an essential component of what we should be working for. I disagree with the World Social Forum that says everybody is welcome except people with military situations, governments, and parties. How can we have social change if they can have military all over the world, but we can't have a military, we can't have a political party, and we can't have a government? That is not a better world as possible. That's, again, a metaphysical effort to disarm us. So I disagree with the World Social Forum's theory on that. I have a list here. Go to Google and do U.S. military bases directory, and I printed out, it says one of nine, in the tiniest print, the United States has bases in virtually every country in the world. That's why we have a $400 billion military budget. So one of the things that we want to do, if people ask you what is progressives and independents to defeat Bush about, I think our last point is it's about U.S. out. U.S. out of Egypt. U.S. out of Iraq. U.S. out of Vietnam. Again, U.S. out of Germany. U.S. out of all the countries that it's occupying. We're in danger of a four-year military occupation of Iraq. I heard Middle Eastern scholars calling for an all-Middle Eastern conference of all the nations in the Middle East to ask the superpowers out, to let them try to solve it, and to have free elections in Iraq. If they have a civil war, didn't we? Did we want the British intervening or the French intervening in this civil war? So the concept that we can't be in Iraq because they might have a civil war, if that's what the conditions are, let them have self-determination in Iraq. So we'll end by saying this. Please get a copy of the 2004 elections, A Turning Point for the U.S. Left, which you can get at www.paitdb. It's not catchy, but progressives and independents to defeat Bush is. Secondly, get the T-shirts, if you could. Third, help us register voters, which Elena's going to talk about. And fourth, let's have this level of political conversation that both parties are trying to crush. Let's essentially build a third force on the ground, and thank you for joining us tonight.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Elena Astilleros, and I'm very excited to be here. One of the things I came into the left with is I came in with a lot of enthusiasm, a lot of anger, and a lot of militancy, but it's taken me a few years to actually learn that to actually make a lot of change, I needed to put in a lot of hard work, too. So I'm here to tell everybody what kind of work needs to be done and what kind of tactics we're proposing to that you can get involved in. This election is just has been buzzing for almost a year now because so many people that I know, so many people, random people, just understand the gravity, the importance of getting Bush out of office. It's actually a place where I've been speaking to a lot of people and knowing that I'm not going to be alone on this issue. There's going to be allies everywhere. We can work together. And through progressives and independents to defeat Bush, I think it would be great to see all of you coming door knocking and convening and talking and being able to do this work together. So Eric already went ahead and started naming a few items that we're asking people to participate in. One of the things is voter registration. The other thing we'll be doing is door knocking. And we're looking for people to translate materials, Spanish, Korean, Chinese, whatever language you can. We want to get this out to as many people. One of the points in the book is that the immigrant community, even the people who can't vote, need to be involved in this and actually form a pact and a group, a block of voters. Because a person who can't vote can definitely influence people who can. And two more things is we're looking for, campus work. Those of you who are involved in schools, please sign up, let us know when you can outreach and if you can do voter registration at your campuses. Last thing is house parties and fundraising. One thing that's been very popular, it seems, is people having house parties, inviting people over, and getting money from their friends and neighbors, because we actually really do need a lot of money to keep organizing, to help send people out to Miami, to where organizers can help if we decide to as a group.
So my name is Damon Azali, and I am working with Progressives and Independents to defeat Bush. The first part of what I want to talk about is some of the stuff that we learned out of the No on Prop 54 campaign. For the last 3 weeks of the No on Prop 54 campaign, it was 3 to 7 people each day of the week from 4 to 8 that were out door knocking. Add that to Saturdays when we went out to Scope, where the coalition to defeat Prop 54 had weekly Saturday marches. We went from 15 people to 30 people to 45 people there. So in total, what we put in about over 1,000 hours of actually doing door knocking and precinct walking, which was very important to the actual defeat of the proposition. The idea of door knocking is trying to create density in a particular precinct. So it's going around and getting 100, 200, 300 people that said they're going to vote for you, with you, or whatever the issue that you're dealing with. And so the nature of that, you have to go. And you can only really spend to get through your names, you can only spend a little bit of time. So that's one thing. The second thing is that that kind of reconfirmed, and this is based on stuff, Immigrants, Rights, and Wrong, which is a publication that the Labor Community Strategy Center put out about Prop 187. And a big piece about it was talking about messaging, talking about demands. How do we talk about it? And so one thing it reconfirmed, much like Kerry is doing now, a lot of the messaging that was controlled, it was controlled by folks who are not kind of the grassroots folks, but the ones kind of the bigger civil rights organizations, Democratic Party. They're putting out stuff that is trying to appeal to the same people that Bush and Kerry are trying to appeal to. So it's the moderate, white, flag-waving voter, right? And that's not people in our community. That's not the Black and Latino community that we're actually doing precinct walking in. And so what was really important is we realized that we want to really shape our messages so that we're actually talking to the people who are on our bases. So that the example of how that looked like is the No on Prop 54 campaign was saying, vote No on 54 because it's bad for your health. Very general, very, just not very specific. Whereas we could have said something like, it takes away the ability to document racial discrimination. It helps support racial profiling, which is all the things that it does, but that's actually the messages that are more targeted to our community. So this is one of the things in terms of where we're talking about independence and initiative in the United Front and the large coalition to actually put out the stronger left politics in it. Actually, last week, Tammy Liu and myself went to the RNC. I was here in LA in 2000 looking at the Democratic National Convention where you had the cops with new bikes, you know, shin guards, you know, everything. Like, sporting teams in high school should be having this stuff, not the cops, right? It was a qualitative different level and in the RNC. Basically, folks were walking down the street and they basically encircled them with netting. You had people who were going, and there was a lady who was going to Victoria's Secret to return something. And she got caught up and arrested and was held for 50 hours inside this bus depot. So when you talk about the indiscriminate use of like state power, this is just the very beginning. And another 4 years of Bush, it's going to be at a way higher level. And actually, there was a delegation from Korea that came that was trying to build a coalition, like multinations, to actually defeat Bush. So from outside, try to figure out how to support the effort inside to defeat Bush, being very clear about what Bush represents. The way they talked about it was that it's a difference between economic imperialism and armed imperialism. They said that this basically, if they lose, if Bush stays in office, it can be the difference of a war in Korea. It can be a difference of killing hundreds of thousands of people. And so their whole thing was like, people in the U.S. need to understand it's not a choice. You need to fight to get him out of office. We're better equipped to actually fight Kerry.
This program was produced by the L.A. Sound Posse. The L.A. Sound Posse records speeches and events dealing with social justice issues. We anti-copyright these recordings and share them via the Internet, via community radio, and as CDs distributed through grassroots social justice groups, nonprofit organizations, committed individuals, and others. Our goal is to be part of the creation of a broad-based, participatory, and democratic civic media in support of the creation of a truly democratic society. You can reach us on the web at www.lasoundposse.org. Contact us for copies of this program on CD, or you can download it for free at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the digit 4, all.net. If you valued what you heard in this program, please feel free to copy and distribute it to others who you think would benefit from hearing it, thus becoming yourself part of a decentralized, democratic civic media. Thanks very much for listening.